This play is part of LA Theater Works' Relativity series of science-themed plays. Lead funding for the Relativity series is provided by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, bridging science and the arts in the modern world.
Now, LA Theater Works continues with Arcadia by Tom Stoppard.
A letter for you, Mr. Hodge.
Oh, thank you. Why have you stopped, Thomasina?
Solio incessa, in igne, seated on a throne, in the fire, and also on a ship, sedebat regina, sat the queen.
There is no reply, Jellyby. Thank you.
I will say so, sir.
The wind smelling sweetly, purpureis velis, by with or from purple sails.
Now, Jellyby.
Yes, sir.
I will have something for the post, if you would be so kind.
Yes, sir.
Was like as to something by with or from lovers. Oh, Septimus. Musica tibiarum imperabat. Music of pipes. Commanded.
Ruled is better.
The silver oars exciting the ocean as if amorous.
That is very good. Plautus, you're on Mr. Chater's book. Let me just put this letter inside it.
Regina reclinabat. The queen was reclining.
Ah, an apple. You want some apple, Plautus? Good tortoise.
Praeter descriptionem, indescribably, in a golden tent, like Venus, and yet more...
Try to put some poetry into it.
How can I if there is none in the Latin?
Oh, a critic.
Is it Queen Dido?
No.
Who is the poet?
Known to you.
Known to me?
Not a Roman.
Mr. Chater!
Your translation is quite like Chater.
I know who it is. It is your friend Byron.
Lord Byron, if you please.
Mama is in love with Lord Byron.
Yes. Nonsense.
It is not nonsense. I saw them together in the gazebo. Lord Byron was reading to her from his satire, and Mama was laughing with her head in her best position.
She did not understand the satire and was showing politeness to a guest.
She is vexed with Papa for his determination to alter the park, but that alone cannot account for her politeness to a guest. She came downstairs hours before her custom. Lord Byron was amusing at breakfast. He paid you a tribute, Septimus.
Did he?
He said you were a witty fellow, and he had almost by heart an article you wrote about... Well, I forget what, but it concerned a book called The Maid of Turkey and how you would not give it to your dog for dinner.
Ah! Mr. Chater was at breakfast, of course.
He was, not like certain lazy bones.
He does not have Latin to set and mathematics to correct.
Correct? What was incorrect in it? Alpha minus? Pooh! What is the minus for?
For doing more than was asked.
You did not like my discovery.
A fancy is not a discovery.
A jibe is not a rebuttal.
There we are. Seal it and done.
You are churlish with me because Mama is paying attention to your friend. Well, let them elope. They cannot turn back the advancement of knowledge. I think it is an excellent discovery. Each week I plot your equations dot for dot, x's against y's in all manner of algebraical relation, and every week they draw themselves as commonplace geometry, as if the world of forms were nothing but arcs and angles. God's truth, Septimus, if there is an equation for a curve like a bell, there must be an equation for one like a bluebell. And if a bluebell, why not a rose? Do we believe nature is written in numbers?
We do.
Then why do your equations only describe the shapes of manufacture?
I do not know.
And thus God could only make a cabinet.
He has mastery of equations, which lead into infinities where we cannot follow.
Oh, what a faint heart. We must work outward from the middle of the maze. We will start with something simple. I will plot the leaf of this apple and deduce its equation. You will be famous for being my tutor when Lord Byron is dead and forgotten.
Back to Cleopatra.
Is it Cleopatra? Oh, I hate Cleopatra.
You hate her? Why?
Everything is turned to love with her. New love, absent love, lost love. Oh, I never knew a heroine that makes such noodles of our sex. It only needs a Roman general to drop anchor outside the window, and away goes the empire like a christening mug into a pawn shop. If Queen Elizabeth had been a Ptolemy, history would have been quite different. We would be admiring the pyramids of Rome and the great Sphinx of Verona.
God save us!
But instead, the Egyptian noodle made carnal embrace with the enemy who burned the great library of Alexandria without so much as a fine for all that is overdue. Oh, Septimus, oh, can you bear it? All the lost plays of the Athenians, 200 at least by Aeschylus, Sophocles, Euripides, thousands of poems. Aristotle's own library brought to Egypt by the noodle's ancestors. How can we sleep for grief?
By counting our stock. 7 plays from Aeschylus, 7 from Sophocles, 19 from Euripides, my lady. You should no more grieve for the rest than for a buckle lost from your first shoe, or for your lesson book, which will be lost when you're old. We shed as we pick up, like travellers who must carry everything in their arms, and what we let fall will be picked up by those behind. The procession is very long, and life is very short. We die on the march. But there's nothing outside the march, so nothing can be lost to it. The missing plays of Sophocles will turn up piece by piece, or be written again in another language. Ancient cures for diseases will reveal themselves once more. Mathematical discoveries, glimpsed and lost to view, will have their time again. You do not suppose, my lady, that if all of Archimedes had been hiding in the great library of Alexandria, we would be at a loss for a corkscrew? I have no doubt that the improved steam-driven heat engine, which puts Mr. Noakes into an ecstasy that he and it and the modern age should all coincide, was described on papyrus. Steam and brass were not invented in Glasgow. Now, where are we? Let me see if I can attempt a free translation for you. At Harrow, I was better at this than Lord Byron. Yes. The barge she sat in, like a burnished throne, burned on the water. The something, the poop, was beaten gold, purple the sails, and what's this? Oh, yes, so perfumed. That the
Cheat.
Winds were lovesick with them.
Cheat.
The oars were silver, which to the tune of flutes kept stroke.
Cheat, cheat,
and
cheat.
And made the water which they beat to follow faster as amorous of their strokes. For her own person it beggared all description. She did lie in her pavilion.
I hope you die!
Oh, good God, man. What have you told her?
Told her? Told her what, Captain Bryce?
Hodge!
Chater! Ah, my dear fellow. Don't hang back. Come in, sir.
Captain Bryce does me the honour. I mean to say, sir, whatever you have to say to me, sir, address yourself to Captain Bryce.
How unusual. Captain Bryce, your wife did not appear yesterday, sir. I trust she is not sick.
My wife? I have no wife. What the devil do you mean, sir?
I do not understand the scheme, Chater. Whom do I address when I want to speak to Captain Bryce?
Oh, slippery, Hodge, slippery.
By the way, Chater...
Yep?
Oh, no, to you. By the way, Chater, I have amazing news to tell you. Someone has taken to writing wild and whirling letters in your name. I received one not half an hour ago.
Mr. Hodge, look to your honour, sir. If you cannot attend to me without this foolery, nominate your second, who might settle the business as between gentlemen. No doubt your friend Byron would do you the service.
Oh, yes. He would do me the service. Mr. Chater, sir.
Yep.
I repent your injury. You are an honest fellow, with no more malice in you than poetry.
Ah, well, that is more like the thing. Is he apologizing?
There is still the injury to his conjugal property. Mrs. Chater's...
Tush, sir.
As you will, her tush, nevertheless.
Oh, excellently found, Mr. Chater. This will please you very much. Lord Byron begs a copy of your new book. He dies to read it and intends to include your name in the second edition of his English Bards and Scotch Reviewers.
English Bards and Scotch Reviewers? Your ladyship is a doggerel, aimed at Lord Byron's seniors and betters. If he intends to include me, he intends to insult me.
Well, of course he does, Mr. Chater. Would you rather be thought not worth insulting?
Well,
You should be proud to be in the company of Rogers and Moore and Wordsworth. Ah, here's the Couch of Eros.
That is my copy, madam.
So much the better. What are a friend's book for, if not to be borrowed? Mr. Hodge, you must speak to your friend and put him out of his affectation of pretending to quit us. I will not have it. He says he is determined on the Malta packet sailing out of Falmouth. His head is full of Lisbon and Lesbos, and his portmanteau of pistols, and I have told him it is not to be thought of. The whole of Europe is in a Napoleonic fit. All the best ruins will be closed, the roads entirely occupied with the movement of armies, the lodgings turned to billets, and the fashion for godless republicanism not yet arrived at its natural reversion. He says his aim is poetry. One does not aim at poetry with pistols. At poets, perhaps. I charge you to take command of his pistols, Mr. Hodge. He is not safe with them. His lameness, he confessed to me, is entirely the result of his habit from boyhood of shooting himself in the foot. What is that noise?
The new Broadwood pianoforte, madam. Our music lessons are at an early stage.
Well, restrict your lessons to the piano side of the instrument and let her loose on the forte when she has learned something.
Now, if that was not God speaking through Lady Croom, he never spoke through anyone.
Take command of Lord Byron's pistols.
You hear, Mr. Chater, sir? How will you answer him?
By killing him. I'm tired of him.
Hey!
Ah!
Oh, damn your soul, Chater. Ovid would have stayed a lawyer, and Virgil a farmer, if they'd known the bathos to which love would descend in your sportive satyrs and noodle nymphs. I'm at your service with a half-ounce ball in your brain. May it satisfy you, behind the boathouse at daybreak. Shall we say 5 o'clock? My compliments to Mrs. Chater. Have no fear for her. She will not want for protection. While Captain Bryce has a guinea in his pocket, he told her so himself.
You lie, sir.
No, sir. Mrs. Chater, perhaps.
You lie, or you will answer to me.
Oh, very well. I can fit you in at 5 minutes after 5. And then it's off to the Malta packet out of Falmouth. You two will be dead. My penurious school friend will remain to tutor Lady Thomasina. And I trust everybody, including Lady Croom, will be satisfied.
He is all bluster and bladder. Rest assured, Chater, I will let the air out of him.
Wait!
Val, look what it says in the primer. I, Thomasina Coverley, have found a truly wonderful method whereby all the forms of nature must give up their numerical secrets and draw themselves through number alone. This margin being too mean for my purpose, the reader must look elsewhere for the new geometry of irregular forms discovered by Thomasina Coverley. Does it mean anything?
I don't know. I don't know what it means, except mathematically.
I meant mathematically.
It's an iterated algorithm.
What's that?
Well, it's a... It's an algorithm that's been iterated. How am I supposed to... The left-hand pages are graphs of what the numbers are doing on the right-hand pages, but all on different scales. Each graph is a small section of the previous one blown up. Like you'd blow up a detail of a photograph, and then a detail of the detail, and so on, forever. Or, in her case, till she ran out of pages.
Is it difficult?
The maths isn't difficult. It's what you did at school. You have some X and Y equation. Any value for X gives you a value for Y. So you put a dot where it's right for both X and Y. Then you take the next value for X, which gives you another value for Y, and when you've done that a few times, you join up the dots, and that's your graph of whatever the equation is.
And is that what she's doing?
No, not exactly. Not at all. What she's doing is, every time she works out a value for Y, she's using that as her next value for X, and so on. Like a feedback. She's feeding the solution back into the equation, and then solving it again. Iteration, you see.
And that's surprising, is it?
Well, it is a bit. It's the technique I'm using on my grouse numbers, and it hasn't been around for much longer than, well, call it 20 years.
Why would she be doing it?
I have no idea. I thought you were doing the Hermit.
Oh, I am. I am. I still am. But Bernard, damn him. Thomasina's tutor turns out to have interesting connections. Bernard is going through the library like a bloodhound. The portfolio was in a cupboard.
There's a lot of stuff around. Gus loves going through it. No old masters or anything.
The maths primer she was using belonged to him, the tutor. He wrote his name in it. Look.
Septimus Hodge.
Why were these things saved, do you think?
Why should there be a reason?
And the diagram. What's it of?
How would I know?
Why are you cross?
I'm not cross.
When your Thomasina was doing maths, it had been the same maths for a couple of thousand years. Classical. And for a century after Thomasina. Then maths left the real world behind. Just like modern art, really. Nature was classical. Maths was suddenly Picasso's. But now, nature is having the last laugh. The freaky stuff is turning out to be the mathematics of the natural world.
This feedback thing?
For example.
Well, could Thomasina have...
No, of course she bloody couldn't!
All right, you're not cross. What did you mean you were doing the same thing she was doing? What are you doing?
Actually, I'm doing it from the other end. She started with an equation and turned it into a graph. I've got a graph, real data, and I'm trying to find the equation which would give you the graph if you used it the way she's used hers. Iterated it.
What for?
It's how you look at population changes in biology. Goldfish in a pond, say. This year, there are X goldfish. Next year, there'll be Y goldfish. Some get born, some get eaten by herons, whatever. Nature manipulates the X and turns it into Y. Then Y goldfish is your starting population for the following year, just like Thomasina. Your value for Y becomes your next value for X. The question is, what is being done to X? What is the manipulation? Whatever it is, it can be written down as mathematics. It's called an algorithm.
It can't be the same every year.
The details change. You can't keep tabs on everything. It's not nature in a box. But it isn't necessary to know the details. When they're all put together, it turns out the population is obeying a mathematical rule.
The goldfish are?
Yes. No, the numbers. It's not about the behavior of fish. It's about the behavior of numbers. This thing works for any phenomenon which eats its own numbers. Measles epidemics, rainfall averages, cotton prices. It's a natural phenomenon in itself. Spooky.
Does it work for grouse?
I don't know yet. I mean, it does, undoubtedly, but it's hard to show. There's more noise with grouse.
Noise?
Distortions. Interference. Real data is messy. There's 1,000 acres of moorland that had grouse on it. Always did, till about 1930. But nobody counted the grouse. They shot them. So you count the grouse they shot. But burning the heather interferes. It improves the food supply. A good year for foxes interferes the other way. They eat the chicks. And then there's the weather. Ooh, it's all very, very noisy out there. Very hard to spot the tune. Like a piano in the next room. It's playing your song, but unfortunately it's out of whack. Some of the strings are missing and the pianist is tone deaf and drunk. I mean, the noise! Impossible!
What do you do?
You start guessing what the tune might be. You try to pick it out of the noise. You try this, you try that. You start to get something. It's half-baked, but you start putting in notes which are missing or not quite the right notes. And bit by bit... Dum-de-dum-dum, dear Valentine. Dum-de-dum-dum to you. The lost algorithm.
Yes, I see. And then what?
I publish.
Of course. Sorry. Jolly good.
That's the theory. Grouse are bastards compared to goldfish.
Why did you choose them?
The game books. My true inheritance. 200 years of real data on a plate.
Somebody wrote down everything that's shot.
Well, that's what a game book is. I'm only using from 1870, when butts and beaters came in.
You mean the game books go back to Thomasina's time?
Oh, yes, the further.
Oh!
No, really. I promise you. I promise you. Not a schoolgirl living in a country house in Derbyshire in 18-something.
Well, what was she doing?
She was just playing with the numbers. The truth is, she wasn't doing anything.
She must have been doing something.
Doodling. Nothing she understood.
A monkey at a typewriter?
Yes. Well, a piano.
She writes here, a method whereby all the forms of nature must give up their numerical secrets and draw themselves through number alone. This feedback, is it a way of making pictures of forms in nature? Just tell me if it is or it isn't.
To me, it is. Pictures of turbulence, growth, change, creation. It's not a way of drawing an elephant, for God's sake.
I'm sorry. So you couldn't make a picture of this apple leaf by iterating a what's it?
Oh, yes, you could do that.
Well, tell me. Honestly, I could kill you.
If you knew the algorithm and fed it back, say, 10,000 times, each time there'd be a dot somewhere on the screen. You'd never know where to expect the next dot, but gradually you'd start to see this shape, because every dot will be inside the shape of this leaf. It wouldn't be a leaf, it would be a mathematical object, but yes, the unpredictable and the predetermined unfold together to make everything the way it is. It's how nature creates itself, on every scale, the snowflake and the snowstorm. Makes me so happy. To be at the beginning again, knowing almost nothing. People were talking about the end of physics. Relativity and quantum looked as if they were going to clean out the whole problem between them. A theory of everything. But they only explained the very big and the very small. The universe, the elementary particles. The ordinary size stuff, which is our lives, the things people write poetry about. Clouds, daffodils, waterfalls, and what happens in a cup of coffee when the cream goes in. These things are full of mystery. As mysterious to us as the heavens were to the Greeks. We're better at predicting events at the edge of the galaxy or inside the nucleus of an atom than whether it'll rain on Auntie's garden party 3 Sundays from now. Because the problem turns out to be different. We can't even predict the next drip from a dripping tap when it gets irregular. Each drip sets up the conditions for the next. The smallest variation blows prediction apart, and the weather is unpredictable the same way. We'll always be unpredictable. When you push the numbers through the computer, you can see it on the screen. The future is disorder. A door like this has cracked open 5 or 6 times since we got up on our hind legs. It's the best possible time to be alive, when almost everything you thought you knew is wrong.
The weather is fairly predictable in the Sahara.
The scale is different, but the graph goes up and down the same way. 6,000 years in the Sahara looks like 6 months in Manchester, I bet you.
How much?
Everything you have to lose.
No.
Quite right. That's why there was corn in Egypt.
What is Gus playing?
I don't know. He makes it up.
Chloe called him genius.
It's what my mother calls him. Only she means it. Last year, some expert had her digging in the wrong place for months to find something or other, the foundations of Capability Brown's boathouse, and Gus put her right first go.
Did he ever speak?
Oh, yes. Until he was 5. You've never asked about him. You get high marks here for good breeding.
Yes, I know. I've always been given credit for my unconcern.
English bards and Scotch reviewers, a penciled superscription. Listen and kiss my psychoclips. Oh, harbinger of sleep who missed the press and hoped his drone might thus escape redress. The wretched chater, bard of Eros couch, for his narcotic let my pencil vouch. Ha! You see, you have to turn over every page.
Is it his handwriting?
Oh, come on.
Obviously not.
Oh, Christ. What do you want?
Proof.
Quite right. Who are you talking about?
Proof! Proof! You'd have to be there, you silly bitch.
I say, you are speaking of my fiancé.
Especially when I have a present for you. Guess what I found? Lady Croom writing from London to her husband. Her brother, Captain Bryce, married a Mrs. Chater. In other words, one might assume a widow.
Let me see that.
I said he was dead. What year? 1810. Oh, my God! 1810. Well done, Hannah. Are you going to tell me it's a different Mr. Chater?
Oh, no. It's her, all right. Note her Christian name.
Charity. Charity! Deny what cannot be proven for charity's sake.
Don't kiss me!
She won't let anyone kiss her.
You see? They wrote. They scribbled. They put it on paper. It was their employment, their diversion. Paper is what they had. And there'll be more. There's always more. We can find it.
Such passion. First Valentine, now you. It's moving.
The aristocratic friend of the tutor, under the same roof as the poor sod whose book he savaged. The first thing he does is seduce Chater's wife. All is discovered. There is a duel. Chater dead. Byron fled. P.S. Guess what? Ha! The widow married her ladyship's brother. Do you honestly think no one wrote a word? How could they not? It dropped from sight, but we will write it again.
You can, Bernard. I'm not going to take any credit. I haven't done anything.
Well, that's very fair. Generous.
Prudent. Chater could have died of anything, anywhere.
But he fought a duel with Byron.
You haven't established it was fought. You haven't established it was Byron. For God's sake, Bernard, you haven't established Byron was even here.
I'll tell you your problem. No guts.
Really?
By which I mean a visceral belief in yourself. Gut instinct. The part of you which doesn't reason. The certainty for which there is no back reference. Because time is reversed. Talk. Tick goes the universe and then recovers itself, but it was enough. Eh? You were in there, and you bloody know.
Are you talking about Lord Byron the poet?
No, you fucking idiot. We're talking about Lord Byron the chartered accountant.
Oh, well, he was here all right, the poet.
How do you know?
He's in the game book. I think he shot a hare. I read through the whole lot once when I had mumps. Some quite interesting people.
Where's the book?
It's not one I'm using. No, too early, of course.
1809.
They've always been in the commode. Ask Chloe.
Oh. Chloe! Chloe!
My mother's lent him her bicycle. Lending one's bicycle is a form of safe sex. Possibly the safest there is. My mother's in a flutter about Bernard, and he's no fool. He gave her a first edition of Horace Walpole, and now she's lent him her bicycle. Can I keep these primer lesson book and this diagram for a while?
Yes, of course.
Yes, Gus, I'm finished. Coming now. Do you have lightning? It's time for his tea. I'm trying to work out the diagram.
What I don't understand is why nobody did this feedback thing before. It's not like relativity. You don't have to be Einstein.
You couldn't see to look before. The electronic calculator was what the telescope was for Galileo.
Calculator?
There wasn't enough time before. There weren't enough pencils. This lesson book took her I don't know how many days, and she hasn't scratched the paintwork. Now she'd only have to press a button, the same button, over and over. Iteration. A few minutes. And what I've done in a couple of months, with only a pencil, the calculations would take me the rest of my life to do again. Thousands of pages. Tens of thousands. And so boring.
Do you mean... Do you mean...
All right, Gus, no need to pull at me. I'm coming.
Do you mean that was the only problem? Enough time and paper and the boredom?
We're going to get out the dressing up box.
Val, is that what you're saying?
Oh, Gus, wait. He hates people shouting.
I'm sorry.
No. I'm saying you'd have to have a reason for doing it.
But Val, anything else?
Well, the other thing is... You'd have to be insane.
Thank you.
Did it happen? Could it happen? Undoubtedly it could. Only 3 years earlier, the Irish poet Tom Moore appeared on the field of combat to avenge a review by Geoffrey of the Edinburgh. These affairs were seldom fatal and sometimes farcical, but potentially the duelist stood in respect to the law no differently from a murderer.
Oh.
Oh, yes, Chloe, indeed. As for the murderee, a minor poet like Ezra Chater could go to his death in a Derbyshire glade as unmissed and unremembered as his contemporary and namesake, the minor botanist who died in the forests of the West Indies, lost to history like the monkey that bit him.
Bit of lettuce, Lightning.
There's a good tortoise.
Sorry.
On April 16th, 1809, a few days after he left Sidley Park, Byron wrote to his solicitor, John Hanson, "If the consequences of my leaving England were 10 times as ruinous as you describe, I have no alternative. There are circumstances which render it absolutely indispensable, and quit the country I must immediately." To which the editor's note in the collected letters reads as follows: "What Byron's urgent reasons for leaving England were at this time has never been revealed. The letter was written from the family seat, Newstead Abbey, Nottinghamshire. A long day's ride to the northwest lay Sidley Park, the estate of the Coverleys, a far grander family, raised by Charles II to the earldom of Croom."
Bernard! Val!
Do you mind?
Hannah!
What, Chloe?
She's so rude!
What? Am I?
Bernard's reading us his lecture.
Yes, I know. Oh, yes! Yes, that was rude. I'm sorry, Bernard.
Mm. What is that? A letter?
Spot on. The India Office Library. Peacock's letter in holograph. I got a copy sent.
Hannah, shut up!
Yes. Sorry.
It's all right. I'll read it to myself.
No! Go on, Bernard. Have I missed anything? Sorry.
The Byrons of Newstead in 1809 comprised an eccentric widow and her undistinguished son, the lame brat, who, until the age of 10, when he came into the title, had been carted about the country from lodging to lodging by his vulgar, hectoring monster of a mother.
Bernard!
Overruled. And who, 4 months past his 21st birthday, was master of nothing but his debts and his genius. Between the Byrons and the Coverleys, there was no social equality and none to be expected. The connection, undisclosed to posterity until now, was with Septimus Hodge, Byron's friend at Harrow and Trinity College.
Bernard.
Sustained. Yes. Byron's contemporary at Harrow and Trinity College.
Thank you.
Yes. And now, tutor in residence to the Croom daughter, Thomasina Coverley. Byron's letters tell us where he was on April 8th and on April 12th. He was at Newstead. But on the 10th, he was at Sidley Park, as attested by the game book preserved there. April 10th, 1809, forenoon, high cloud, dry, and sun between times, wind southeasterly. Self, Augustus, Lord Byron. 14 pigeon, 1 hare, Lord B. But, as we know now, the drama of life and death at Sidley Park was not about pigeons, but about sex and literature.
Unless you were the pigeon.
I don't have to do this. I'm paying you a compliment.
Ignore him, Bernard. Go on, get to the duel.
Hannah's not even paying attention.
Yes, I am. It's all going in. I often work with the radio on.
Oh, thanks.
Is there much more?
Hannah?
No, it's fascinating. I just wondered how much more there was. I need to ask Valentine about this letter. Sorry, Bernard. Go on. This will keep.
Yes, sorry, Bernard.
Please, Bernard.
Where was I?
Pigeons.
Sex.
Literature.
Life and death. Right. Nothing could be more eloquent of that than the three documents I have quoted. The terse demand to settle a matter in private, the desperate scribble of "My husband has sent for pistols," and on April 11th, the gauntlet thrown down by the aggrieved and cuckolded author Ezra Chater. The covers have not survived. What is certain is that all three letters were in Byron's possession when his books were sold in 1816. preserved in the pages of the Couch of Eros, which, 7 years earlier at Sidley Park, Byron had borrowed from Septimus Hodge.
Borrowed?
I will be taking questions at the end. Constructive comments will be welcome, which is indeed my reason for trying out in the provinces before my London opening under the auspices of the Byron Society prior to publication. Oh, by the way, Valentine, do you want a credit? Hmm? The game book recently discovered by?
It was never lost, Bernard.
As recently pointed out by? Yes. I don't normally like giving credit where it's due, but with scholarly articles, as with divorce, there is a certain cachet in citing a member of the aristocracy. I'll pop it in ad lib for the lecture and give you a mention in the press release. How's that?
Very kind.
Press release? What happened to the Journal of English Studies?
That comes later, with the apparatus, eh? And in the recognized tone, very dry, very modest, absolutely gloat-free, and yet unmistakably, eat your heart out, you dozy bastards. But first, it's media dawn, book early to avoid disappointment. Where was I?
Game book.
Eros.
Borrowed.
Right. Borrowed from Septimus Hodge. Is it conceivable that the letters were already in the book when Byron borrowed it?
Yes.
Shut up, Val.
Well, it's conceivable.
Is it likely that Hodge would have lent Byron the book without first removing the three private letters?
Look, sorry, I only meant Byron could have borrowed the book without asking.
That's true.
Then why wouldn't Hodge get them back?
I don't know. I wasn't there.
That's right. You bloody weren't.
Go on, Bernard.
It is the third document, the challenge itself, that convinces. Chater, as a man and a poet, points the finger at his slanderer in the press. Neither as a man nor a poet did Ezra Chater cut such a figure as to be habitually slandered or even mentioned in the press. It is surely indisputable that the slander was the review of The Maid of Turkey in the Piccadilly Recreation. Did Septimus Hodge have any connection with the London periodicals? No. Did Byron? Yes! He had reviewed Wordsworth 2 years earlier. He was to review Spencer 2 years later. And do we have any clue as to Byron's opinion of Chater the poet? Yes! Who but Byron could have written the four lines penciled into Lady Croom's copy of English Bards and Scotch Reviewers?
Almost anybody.
Darling.
Don't call me darling.
Dickhead, then. Is it likely that the man Chater calls his friend, Septimus Hodge, is the same man who screwed his wife and kicked the shit out of his last book?
Put it like that, almost certain.
You've been deeply wounded in the past, haven't you, Hannah?
Nothing compared to listening to this. Why is there nothing in Byron's letters about the Piccadilly reviews?
Exactly. Because he killed the author.
But the first one, The Maid of Turkey, was the year before. Was he clairvoyant?
Letters get lost.
Thank you. Exactly. There is a platonic letter which confirms everything. Lost but ineradicable, like radio voices rippling through the universe for all eternity. My dear Hodge, here I am in Albania, and you're the only person in the whole world who knows why. Poor C. I never wished him any harm, except in the Piccadilly, of course. It was the woman who bade me eat, dear Hodge. What a tragic business. But thank God it ended well for poetry. Yours ever, B. P.S. Burn this.
How did Chater find out the reviewer was Byron?
I don't know. I wasn't there, was I? You wish to say something, Hannah?
Moi?
I know. Byron told Mrs. Chater in bed. Next day he dumped her, so she grassed on him and pleaded date rape.
Date rape? What do you mean, date rape?
April the 10th.
Right. Forget it.
Oh, sorry, Bernard.
No,
oh,
no. Gosh, I've had nothing but sarcasm silly. And childish interruptions.
What did I do?
No credit for probably the most sensational literary discovery of the century.
I think you're jolly unfair. They're jealous, Bernard.
I won't say another word,
yes,
Bernard.
Yes, yes, go on, Bernard. We promise.
Yes.
Well,
really?
Only if you stop feeding tortoises.
Well, it's his lunchtime.
And on condition that I am afforded the common courtesy of a scholar among scholars.
Absolutely, Mum, till you're finished.
After which any comments are to be couched in terms of accepted academic...
Dignity, you're right, Bernard.
Respect.
Respect, absolutely. The language of scholars. Count on it.
(Clears throat) Last paragraph. Without question, Ezra Chater issued a challenge to somebody if a duel was fought in the dawn mist of Sidley Park in April 1809. His opponent, on the evidence, was a critic with a gift for ridicule and a taste for seduction. Do we need to look far? Without question, Mrs. Chater was a widow by 1810. If we seek the occasion of Ezra Chater's early and unrecorded death, do we need to look far? Without question, Lord Byron, in the very season of his emergence as a literary figure, quit the country in a cloud of panic and mystery and stayed abroad for 2 years at a time when continental travel was unusual and dangerous. If we seek his reason, do we need to look far?
Bollocks!
Well, I think it's true.
You've left out everything which doesn't fit. Byron had been banging on for months about leaving England. There's a letter in February.
But he didn't go, did he?
And then he didn't sail until the beginning of July.
Everything moved more slowly then. Time was different. He was 2 weeks in Falmouth, waiting for wind or something.
Bernard, I don't know why I'm bothering. You're arrogant, greedy, and reckless. You've gone from a glint in your eye to a sure thing in a hop, skip, and a jump. You deserve what you get, and I think you're mad. But I can't help myself. You're like some exasperating child pedaling its tricycle towards the edge of a cliff, and I have to do something. So listen to me. If Byron killed Chater in a duel, I'm Marie of Romania. You'll end up with so much fame, you won't leave the house without a paper bag over your head.
Actually, Bernard, as a scientist, your theory is incomplete.
But I'm not a scientist.
No. As a scientist...
I have yet to hear a proper argument.
Nobody would kill a man and then pan his book. I mean, not in that order. So he must have borrowed the book, written the review, posted it, seduced Mrs. Chater, fought a duel and departed all in the space of 2 or 3 days. Who would do that?
Byron.
It's hopeless.
You've never understood him, as you've shown in your novelette.
In my what?
Oh, sorry. Did you think it was a work of historical revisionism? Byron, the spoiled child, promoted beyond his gifts by the spirit of the age, and Caroline, the closet intellectual, shafted by a male society.
I read that somewhere.
It's his review.
And bloody well said, too. You got them backwards, darling. Caroline was romantic waffle on wheels with no talent, and Byron was an 18th century rationalist touched by genius. And he killed Chater.
If it's not too late to change my mind, I'd like you to go ahead.
I intend to. Look to the moat in your own eye. You even had the wrong bloke on the dust jacket.
Dust jacket?
What about my computer model? Aren't you going to mention it?
It's inconclusive.
The Piccadilly reviews aren't a very good fit with Byron's other reviews, you see.
What do you mean, the wrong bloke?
The other reviews aren't a very good fit for each other. Are they?
No, but differently. The parameters...
Parameters! You can't stick Byron's head in your laptop. Genius isn't like your average grouse.
Well, it's all trivial anyway.
What is?
Who wrote what when?
Trivial?
Personalities.
I'm sorry. Did you say trivial?
It's a technical term.
Not where I come from, it isn't.
The questions you're asking don't matter, you see? It's like arguing who got there first with the calculus. The English say Newton, the Germans say Leibniz. But it doesn't matter. Personalities. What matters is the calculus. Scientific progress. Knowledge.
Really? Why?
Why what?
Why does scientific progress matter more than personalities?
Is he serious?
No, he's trivial. Bernard!
Do yourself a favor, Bernard. You're on a loser.
You're going to zap me with penicillin and pesticides? Spare me that, and I'll spare you the bomb and aerosols. But don't confuse progress with perfectibility. A great poet is always timely. A great philosopher is an urgent need. There's no rush for Isaac Newton. We were quite happy with Aristotle's cosmos. Personally, I preferred it. 55 crystal spheres geared to God's crankshaft is my idea of a satisfying universe. I can't think of anything more trivial than the speed of light. Quarks, quasars, big bangs, black holes. Who gives a shit? How do you people con us out of all that status, all that money? And why are you so pleased with yourselves?
Are you against penicillin, Bernard?
Don't feed the animals. I'd push the lot of you over a cliff myself. Except the one in the wheelchair. I think I'd lose the sympathy vote before people had time to think it through.
What the hell do you mean, the dust jacket?
If knowledge isn't self-knowledge, it isn't doing much, mate. Is the universe expanding? Is it contracting? Is it standing on one leg and singing when Father painted the parlor? Leave me out. I'll expand my universe without you. She walks in beauty like the night of cloudless climes and starry skies, and all that's best of dark and bright meet in her aspect and her eyes. There you are. He wrote it after coming home from a party. What is it that you're doing with Grouse, Valentine? I'd love to know.
He's not against penicillin, and he knows I'm not against poetry. I've given up on the Grouse.
You haven't, Valentine.
I can't do it.
Why?
There's too much noise. There's just too much bloody noise!
Oh, you bastard!
Ow!
Bennett! Come on, Gus!
Valentine! Valentine!
Well, I think that's everybody. You can leave now. Give Lightning a kick on your way out.
Yes, I'm sorry about that. It's no fun when it's not among pros, is it?
No.
Oh, well. Do you want to know about your book jacket, Lord Byron and Caroline Lamb at the Royal Academy, ink study by Henry Fuseli?
What about it?
It's not them.
Who says?
This Fuseli expert in the Byron Society Journal, yes, they sent me the latest as a distinguished guest speaker.
But of course it's them. Everyone knows.
Popular tradition only. Yes, here we are. No earlier than 1820. He's analyzed it. Read at your leisure.
Analyzed it?
Charming sketch, of course, but Byron was in Italy.
But Bernard, I know it's them.
How?
How? It just is. Analyzed it, my big toe.
Language.
He's wrong.
Oh, gut instinct, you mean?
He's wrong.
Well, it's all trivial, isn't it? Why don't you come?
Where?
With me.
To London. What for?
What for?
Oh, your lecture.
No, no. Bugger that. Sex.
Oh. No. Thanks. Bernard!
You should try it. It's very underrated.
Nothing against it.
Yes, you have. You should let yourself go a bit. You might have written a better book. Or at any rate, the right book.
Sex and literature. Literature and sex. Your conversation, left to itself, doesn't have many places to go. Like two marbles rolling around a pudding basin. One of them is always sex.
Ah, well, yes. Men all over.
No doubt. Einstein, relativity and sex. Chippendale, sex and furniture. Galileo, did the earth move? What the hell is it with you people? Chaps sometimes wanted to marry me, and I don't know a worse bargain. Available sex against not being allowed to fart in bed. What do you mean, the right book?
It takes a romantic to make a heroine of Caroline Lamb. You were cut out for Byron.
So, cheerio.
Oh, I'm coming back for the dance, you know. Chloe asked me.
She meant well, but I don't dance.
No, no. I'm going with her.
Oh, I see. Don't, actually.
I'm her date, Sub Rosa. Don't tell Mother.
She doesn't want her mother to know.
No, I don't want her mother to know. This is my first experience of the landed aristocracy. I tell you, I'm boggle-eyed.
Bernard, you haven't seduced that girl.
Seduced her? Every time I turned round, she was up a library ladder. In the end, I gave in. That reminds me. I spotted something between her legs that made me think of you.
Ah!
Ah! Ugh. The Peaks, Traveller and Gazetteer, James Godolphin, 1832. Unillustrated, I'm afraid. Sidley Park in Derbyshire, property of the Earl of Croom.
The world is going to hell in a handcart.
500 acres, including 40 of lake. The park by Brown and Noakes has pleasing features in the horrid style. Viaduct, grotto, etc. A hermitage occupied by a lunatic since 20 years, without discourse or companion, save for a pet tortoise, Plautus by name, which he suffers children to touch on request. A tortoise. There must be a feature. Here, see for yourself.
Thank you.
The station taxi is at the front?
Yes, thanks. Oh, did Peacock come up trumps?
For some.
Hermit's name and CV. Here, let me see the letter. My dear Thackeray, God, I'm good. Well, wish me luck. Valentine, sorry about, you know, and Hannah, about your...
Piss off, Bernard.
Right.
Don't let Bernard get to you. It's only performance art, you know. Rhetoric, they used to teach it in ancient times, like PT. It's not about being right. They had philosophy for that. Rhetoric was their chat show. Bernard's indignation is a sort of aerobics for when he gets on television.
I don't care to be rubbished by the dustbin man. What's this? The what of the lunatic?
It's Peacock's letter. The testament of the lunatic serves as a caution against French fashion, for it was Frenchified mathematic that brought him to the melancholy certitude of a world without light or life. As a wooden stove that must consume itself until ash and stove are as one, and heat is gone from the earth. He died aged 27, hoary as Job and meagre as a cabbage stalk. The proof of his prediction, even yet unyielding to his labours for the restitution of hope through good English algebra.
That's it?
Is there anything in it?
In what? We're all doomed? Oh, yes, sure. It's called the second law of thermodynamics.
Was it known about?
By poets and lunatics from time immemorial.
Seriously?
No.
Is it anything to do with, you know, Thomasina's discovery?
She didn't discover anything.
Her lesson book.
No.
A coincidence, then.
What is?
It says, he died aged 27. That was in 1834, so he was born in 1787. So was the tutor. He says so in his letter to Lord Croom when he recommended himself for the job. Date of birth, 1787. The hermit was born in the same year as Septimus Hodge.
Did Bernard bite you in the leg?
Don't you see? I thought my hermit was a perfect symbol, an idiot in the landscape, but this is better. The age of enlightenment banished into the romantic wilderness. The genius of Sidley Park living on in a hermit's hut.
You don't know that.
Oh, but I do. I do. Somewhere there will be something. If only I can find it.
Next time on LA Theatre Works, The Conclusion of Arcadia by Tom Stoppard. I'm Susan Lowenberg, producing director of LA Theatre Works.